Do it.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Loose Cannon. We got a little bit of a late start there because we were talking about this book that we're going to be talking about and kind of about what it's about and the odd gaps in the lore that this book is just kind of making more apparent as time goes on. But it's been another 2 weeks. We are in October. Our last show was actually October as well. But now next week, we are having our Festival of the Lost. Well, it's not the third one, but it's the third one in Destiny 2. I was going to say third annual. But is it the fifth annual? Or fourth annual?
I'm pretty sure there was... Okay, so let's see. That would be... Well, yeah. Yeah, because... The first Festival of the Lost was, it didn't happen in 2014, it was in 2015.
So I was saying fifth annual, and...
So that's actually, probably right.
No, it's eighth annual.
Oh, because we're in, well, I mean in Destiny 2. So it's eighth annual?
Yeah, if it happened in 2015.
16, 17, 18. Oh my god.
Right?
Wow. Yeah.
all those fucking years between 2020 and now, they don't exist in my brain. I have like time blindness and it's not there. It's not there
for me. Oh my goodness. I know. I still feel like I'm 16 years old and in high school.
Yeah, like it's like that thing when people were like, "Can you believe that the 90s were 10 years ago?" And I'm like, "Yeah, that's
Yeah, exactly.
It's one of those. how have your weeks been now?
It's pretty good. I've been busy. We just had our pumpkin party yesterday, so we had that.
Pumpkin party.
Yeah.
Nice.
Had a pumpkin party. It was pretty cool. We all did carving the pumpkins, painting the pumpkins, ate a bunch of food. I made fajitas.
As is traditional when having a pumpkin party.
Oh, yeah, totally. In Texas, it is. We can actually go outside right now and enjoy the weather. Cause
I mean, so can I. Like,
it's chilly, though, right now here.
I love it. This is my weather. I live in Connecticut, and so people like to say that we have seasons, and it's like, yeah, we do. We have, like, summer that extends into October, and then we have winter that extends into, like April, and it's just like it's never actually fall or spring. Those two seasons exist for like 2 weeks in the year.
Exactly.
And we're in fall right now. It's pretty great.
Well, see, in Texas we get all the weather, and we get extreme weather events, and they can happen in the most bizarre times of the year. Like, we can get snow. You know, for here in Texas, I mean, we can get snow in like April, you know, and then the next day it'll be 100 degrees.
Yeah. Yeah. That's how this is. This year has been for us as well, where, the week before, whatever holiday it is that you open pools traditionally, the week before it was like 90 degrees and we were like, oh my god, open the fucking pool, come on. And then they opened the pool and it was 60 degrees for like months. And then the week after they closed the pool, it was 85, and it's like, what is happening,
right? Yeah, well, like, everybody comes over here to the lakes because it's nice enough year round. So a lot of like wakeboarders, and, you know, that whole thing, the skiing and stuff like that. They even do a lot of events in like November.
Yeah.
They'll have like competitions out on the lake in November, and it's like warm. It's like, you know, 80s, 90s.
Oh, I could not live in a world where it's 80s, 90s in November.
Oh yeah. Yeah. It can happen. And then, you know, yeah. And then like 2 weeks later, it'll be freezing cold for no reason.
I never did wakeboarding. I did on a lake. I did, knee boarding, where you just like kind of, you know, kneel on a wider board.
Yeah.
I learned, I did that with, some like extended family, and, I wasn't really getting it, Uncle, whatever the hell he is to me, was like, let's take him out to the other side where no one's at, so he doesn't feel the pressure of everyone watching him, and he can just kind of do it on his own and figure it out. And tried it once, failed. Tried it a second time, failed. Went to try it a third time. I looked down at the water and I see a fucking snapping turtle, like the size of a basketball, walking to my feet. And you bet your ass I learned how to kneeboard that third time. I got the fuck out
That's
of there.
funny. Lakes are freaky, man. They're scary. I don't mind if I'm in the middle of the lake on a boat and my feet are
Yeah.
just kind of dangling, but anywhere that's muddy, oh man, I freak out.
Yeah. Oh yeah. No, I'm the same way. I hate it when it's like slimy and it's like, oh, I don't want to step on
Yeah.
that.
Can't do it. Can't do it.
Well, these past weeks have been the end, and I put that in air quotes, the end of the season of Destiny, because week 7 ends what we know as the story, but week 8 offered an additional secret, and there's still secrets to be found per the triumphs. There's a gap in the more, because we had,
The
was it
altar table
Nightmorph?
thingy.
Well,
Yeah,
no,
Nightmorph.
yeah, it was Nightmorph. No, it went Mother Morph, Nightmorph, and then King Morph, and then there's a triumph right after King Morph. That we don't have, that I don't have. Maybe other people have it, and it's just a me thing, which would be a little funny that if I'm like hyping this up, because I have a theory about it. I should have done more research. But there's also a triumph that says how listen to all of the Helm messages, which I don't have. Do you have that completed, that triumph?
Nope.
Okay. So it appears that there's more secrets. Air quotes, secrets to be found because they're time gated. I mean, they're still secrets. It's just don't waste your efforts today. Waste your efforts in 2 days, you know?
Huh. So I wonder what they are.
Yeah. My biggest bet would be that it's a transitional piece either to the next season or to a future event where it's meant to be like next season or 5 seasons from or 6 months from now, we'll look back at the event that the whatever is going to be found, the whatever is going to happen, and we're going to be like, this is what triggered that event.
Okay.
That's my thought. And in the lore book, if we don't get to it today, I will bring it up just so that we have it like here in the episode. But there is an entry in here from Savathun's perspective that really makes me think that's what it's going to be. There's two entries, one from Savathun's perspective and one from Eris's perspective that makes me think that is the final triumph after King Morph, and I'm really excited about it.
Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah. It's very interesting. For those who just want to figure it out themselves in the time of us talking, it would be entry 4 and 12, and you might be able to see where my mind is going. But before we get to the book, we have a weekly lore card presented by Destiny Armory Define. Would you like to get to
Yeah, you got my mind spinning about this though.
that?
That's all right.
That's I mean, I feel like that's kind of like the point where it's like you make these like alluring opening statements and it's like news at 11.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's I hate how the news will give you find out what happened at this executive's corporation when they all got fired and then we'll tell you more. And then the news is literally they got fired.
Yeah.
It's like, why did
Toxic
you tell
virus in
me
our
this?
meat? Find out more later after you eat dinner.
It's mad cow disease.
Yeah.
There's a story. Oh, okay. All right. So this week's lore card was it's actually one I've done before a long time ago, but
Because this was a green weapon, right?
I just thought it was a little cool because I really enjoy this character as far as culture and folklore goes. He's got a lot of, I don't know, it's one of those characters that was probably an individual. They were a wise person, and I mean, they obviously existed in some capacity, but as the years went on, they got conflated, and then the character became so widespread and so known throughout the world that it like transformed into this like catch-all for all of these great stories that people tell for whatever reason, for moral or humorous reasons, or just to poke fun or at our own humanity, I guess. Anyway, so get into that. So there's a sword in Destiny, and it's called Nasreddin. That's kind of how I pronounce it, but it was a green sword. I think we got it originally when Destiny 1 or Destiny 2 first started from the EDZ area, from that first Lost Sector, if I remember correctly, which was underneath Devran. And yeah, it was weird because that was how you got Nasreddin, but it was a green sword. It wasn't anything fantastic, but it was a sword nonetheless. Like, it was probably the first sword you would really get that was a Destiny 2 sword, outside of exotics. So now it's legendary. But the flavor text on it for Nasreddin is: this weapon was forged by Devrim K. And then it's got the eighth, so that that kind of tells you Devrim K, right? For the survivors. So Devrim K the eighth for the survivors. So there's not really lore kind of revolving around this, but that's just kind of like what that is. But if I was to assume something, like maybe it has something to do with Devrim K's storytelling, like his character, he seems to like pr be pretty good at telling stories, I guess. And that's the way it seems when you get the dialogue from him in game. So that's all I could really kind of like correlate the two with one another. It's like, what does that mean? So why is it a Devrim K weapon? Anyway, maybe we'll get something later. So Nasreddin was he's known as Nasreddin Hoxha, or Mulla Nasreddin. So he's a beloved figure in Persian folklore whose tales have captivated audiences for centuries. With his wit, wisdom, and his absurdity, Nasreddin's stories continue to entertain and offer valuable life lessons. So he's kind of like the character that goes through the he's kind of like the he's like the butt of the joke, or the wise man saying the funny thing, and so Nasreddin is believed to have originated in the 13th century in a region that is now known as Turkey. However, his tales quickly spread across the Persian-speaking world, becoming an integral part of cultural and literary fabric of the region. So he's depicted a lot of times riding on top of a donkey, and he it's because of one of the stories that he has. So he's depicted as a wise but eccentric scholar or religious leader, renowned for his unconventional behavior and insightful sayings. He challenges social norms and expectations, often using humor and satire to expose human follies and hypocrisies. Nasreddin's stories use clever wordplay and double entendre. His responses to various situations are often intentionally ambiguous, leaving listeners both amused and contemplating deeper meanings. I like that because with some of my favorite satire or some of my favorite jokes are very ambiguous. And he does a really they do a really good job with Nasreddin as a folklore character. Nasreddin's anecdotes touch upon a range of topics such as politics, religion, ethics, and human nature, making his tales both relatable and thought-provoking. So Nasreddin's impact extends beyond Persian folklore. with his tales being adapted and celebrated in numerous cultures across the world, from Turkey to Central Asia, the Middle East, and even parts of Africa. He has become the symbol of wisdom, humor, and intellectual curiosity. So here's just one of his silly little stories. So this one's called Heavy Coat, or Heavy Coat. So one night, the people heard a frightful noise from the Hodja's house. They asked in the morning, "What was that noise?" And then this is, Nasreddin saying this. He goes, "Oh, my coat fell down the stairs." And then the crowd says, "Can you make such a noise?" And he says, "If you were in it like me, yes." It's just silly stuff.
That's a great one. That's really funny. I like that.
Yeah. So, it's kind of like he embodies this character that I don't know, like, how stuff like this gets passed down. I'm sure there's some archaeological, historian type of science thing that there's probably somebody out there that does specifically this. But I would love to know how the branches, spread about. Because some of these stories that he's responsible for have morphed and changed, and even the main character, Nasreddin's name, has changed, and it's become, other things. There's other characters like this that we know in folklores and in other cultures, such as like Confucius. You know about Confucius. He's always saying like double speak or something that is kind of get your mind going, and then there's always been a lot of other, somewhat religious leaders that have had neat anecdotes or moral stories and stuff like that. But as far as Nasreddin and Hoxha, his whole story, which is really unique, is it's always something silly that happens to him or his like wordplay on the world. So if you say something to him, accusing him of something, he'll find a way to get out of it. You know what I mean? So that's kind of like his character. But I thought that was a good one, the heavy cut one. But there's a ton of stories. If you ever want to go look them up, the Nasreddin stories, there's some really, really funny ones. Some of them are really long, but some of them are short like that.
I really like that one. I'm gonna share that with my coworkers on Monday. That was a really, I was not expecting it to go there. I was just like,
Yeah, see.
where's this going? This is like old timey.
Yeah, there's a lot of good ones out there, though. They've done books, all kinds of stuff.
All right.
Oh, I'm sorry. I wanted to
No
do
worries.
one more, and this one that I forget. This one is one that I looked up a long time ago, and this one is weird because it reminded me of Destiny as a whole, and like Xur and the Nine and all of that. So this one's a cool one. It's called Hoxha's Dream. So in his dream, some people gave the Hoxha 9 gold coins, but Hoxha wanted 10, so he refused them. Suddenly, he woke and saw that his hands were empty. So he quickly closed his eyes again and said, "It's okay, I'll take the 9 coins."
That's good.
Yeah, sorry.
That's a good one as well. Those are funny. There's a word for it that I'm blanking on. Like quaint, I think might fit, where it's just, they're just like very, just like very gentle, like chuckle, sense of like some sensible chuckle meme. I don't have a book that I can flip through to.
He was probably like the living embodiment of memes back then.
Yeah, actually, yeah. Holy shit, because that's where it all started, right?
Well, some of them really challenged like political and religious things that were happening at the time. So it was a way for people in society to vent their frustrations by using a character to kind of portray how they felt, you know, which is cool. I like it. It's kind of like political drawings that we have today, you know, kind of depicting current events. Yeah. So.
Well, that was great. I'm gonna be looking into his stories. That's I never would have because I don't do that. I don't like look into the naming conventions unless they're like I'm doing it for the show notes. Like there's an entry here. Entry, I think it's 10. Like not 10. Whichever one it is, it's entry 6. It's Greek, whatever it says. So I'm like, I don't know what the fuck that says. And it's like, Catalo Phiromai, Catalo-Phiromai, I believe it would be pronounced. Assuming it's pronounced how it's spelled, which is the opening word in a story that we'll get to. And it's like, if it's not like right in front of me like that, I don't go, Nazreddin, that's a silly word. Let's dig into that. So that's why I love Armory Defined to just be like, oh, that's really cool. Like, you know, like I never would have known about this guy otherwise.
Thanks.
So I got my notes for the last weeks. We'll just run through these really quick and then we'll get into the book.
Let's do it.
So week 7 starts with a monologue from Eris. She's mad that Savathun has predicted that she will lose herself to the hive. Eris calls the remaining hive prey and calls to us to perform the final tithe and says, "Let it be glorious." And so we run a spire and then we get a holo projector with Ikora, where Ikora briefs us that Eris has set off to the Oubliette and has requested something for Transmat. And so, like, when I was playing this, I was like, the fuck did she request? Like, they made it, the fact that they wouldn't tell us what it is completely blanked my mind on the very obvious what it is for
It's not
Transmat
like
from the
me.
Tower Vaults. We're sent to give Eris the strength she needs to reshape the entire Hive Pantheon, which is actually a very good foreshadow. So we have the mission Sunder, and Imaru says you activate the Oubliette again, and Zivu's goons are gonna go full Torah bottle on you, which is a fucking like great turn of phrase from Imaru. In that mission, we fight and kill the Leviathan Eater. How'd you think that mission was? I thought the mission was all right. I thought it was very easy, which I kind of appreciate also. I wasn't really looking for a challenge that day.
I exactly. Yeah. Well, especially after if you do it, you know, if you're doing it to do it so that you can just get on with playing, and then you have to do all the things, and then you get to that point, you're like, oh my God, I'm not ready for a big battle. But this boss comes out and yeah, it was pretty good. I mean, it wasn't super hard like you said, but you know, when you look at that health bar and you see it's not going down, you're like, oh crap.
Yours wasn't going
You
down. I
know.
guess you weren't using Strand Hunter.
No, I wasn't. I
I was
wasn't.
just throwing
It
Beyblades at that guy and he was just fucking dropping. It
took
was so
well,
great.
halfway it starts going down like really fast. So I think it was kind of like one of those things. Are you serious about being here?
The other thing that made me really just laugh about it is and I mean, you know, they couldn't have predicted it would be as effective as it was, but one of the minor arcana you get, the solar one, when you pick up a solar crystal, it gives you restoration and it only lasts for like 3 seconds. It's not very long. It's very balanced. However, you can put it down and pick it right back up and get restoration for 3 seconds again, and nothing
I
can
didn't
hurt
know
you.
that.
I
Oh,
told you
man.
that. I told you that
Oh,
weeks
man.
ago. Yeah, no,
Yeah, you
nothing could hurt
did.
you. I was just walking through, it's like 50 yards. I'm like, I'm not fighting you. I'm bringing this to the cradle and I'm dropping it off. You're not touching me. And then I melee one of them. I had fucking what's it called? The chain face, Assassin's Cowl. I just melee one of them, go invis, and I'm like, all right, time to go pick up the second one and gain my
Nice.
invincibility.
Nice.
So we
Yeah, I
fight and
completely
kill.
forgot about that restoration. I completely forgot.
So we fight and kill the Leviathan Eater, and that's when Savathun is the something. She's transmatted and revived, and she looks at Eris in her morph, I will just say morph, and she goes, "It looks good on you, honey," which is a very Savathun line. I'm realizing,
Yeah.
like, Savathun is like this, like, twisted modernist almost, where she's like fully embracing, like, like, I
Yeah.
like it personally. I know people, like, they see the characters like Cade, and it's like, oh, what's Cade's angle? And it's like, oh, he's the not serious funny guy, and they're like, oh, I love it. And then they see a character like Shaw Han, and it's like, what's his deal? And so he's not serious funny guy, and they're like, oh, I hate him. And it's like, oh, it's the same thing, but you just choose to not like him all of a sudden.
Yeah, that's funny. Yeah.
And so Eris kills Savathun with, I noticed this in the cutscene. Did you notice what she killed her with?
Yeah, the nightshade
Well, I
sword or
don't know
whatever
the
it's
name,
called.
but the Shadowkeep sword. I was like,
Yeah.
oh, that's fucking sweet.
Yeah, I noticed that right off the bat.
Yeah. So Eris kills Savathun, and in doing so, gained the strength as Oryx did back in the day, killing Savathun and Zivu to gain the strength to kill Akka. In that moment, for just a moment, Eris was the strongest hive ever. And with that strength, she, excuse me, she banishes Zivu now and forever from her throne. Like, Zivu is no longer a god.
Right.
And,
And
or,
says
yeah.
it
Oh.
says she's just a normal person now.
Mortal, yeah.
Mortal, that's what I meant. Yeah, mortal now. So somewhere out there is a pissed off Zivu.
Yeah. It's got to be right. And so
Yeah.
then we have an interaction with Eris. She's no longer in her hive morph. And so Eris tells us about how she severed Zivu's connection with her throne world, making her mortal. Savathun has re was revived again after being killed by Eris. And this was like a part of the deal. Savathun gets revived a second time and gets to leave. But Imaru is left behind as Eris's ward, ensuring that Savathun can't do anything again. Because basically, it's like, we killed you once, we can do it again, we have your ghost. Try anything funny, we're coming after you, you know?
Right, yeah.
And very, very nice ending for Eris. I'm very happy that this is how it goes. Her final little lines are, "For now, I would like only tea. Tea and silence."
Yeah.
So,
Yeah.
very happy ending for Eris. And then,
Well, that's good too, because that kind of summarizes what's happened in the lore with Eris as well. She's always talked about how, like, she just wants a gentle place, like a library, where she can rest and hang out and, sip tea and just kind of like relax for a while. And she finally gets this chance to do that. So for lore people that have read that in the lore, it's kind of a neat little call to them. But also, it's a nice little phrase for people who don't read the lore to just understand she wants to chill out for a minute.
She's been through a lot. Like, from the beginning, she's just been going through it, and it's still not completely over, because, I mean, Zivu is still alive. Arguably, Savathun is still out there, but maybe Savathun's not really a thing anymore, because that is kind of what Bungie said. They were like, we're like over with Savathun, so,
Yeah.
but Eris is basically just like, I'm on vacation until the next one, which is it's very nice for her. And then lastly, from week 7, we have a radio message from Ikora, where Ikora summarizes the recent event. Zivu is a threat, but first the witness must be dealt with. Savathun is gone. Savathun gave us the secret to enter the portal, and Asa is now in hibernation. Eris is thriving. So right there, saying that Zivu's a threat, we're just not going to fight her right now. We're going to focus on the
Right.
witness, means next season will not be the season in which we fight Zivu, as I and probably others. Were you thinking we would actually fight Zivu next season, like in a dungeon?
I thought we would. I
Yeah.
really did.
So that's not what the plan is. The plan is to prepare the entering of the portal on the Traveler, and then that just takes us right into Final Shape. So Bungie's really lined this up to like go from event to event to event, where we met Asa and we learned Asa and who Asa is and what Asa knows and the secrets about the Witness, and then Asa was used to give Eris the hive morph that she takes, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And then Eris used Savathun to learn how to get into the portal. We're going to learn how to get into the portal so we can finally get everything's like very like feeding the next step between the beginning of Lightfall and to the final shape, which is really nice from a bird's eye view. However, when you're like in it week by week, it can feel a little like dragging. So I kind of understand both sides.
Yeah.
But we do know after Final Shape, the very first episode, I believe, is one called was it Blasphemy or Heresy?
Yeah, I thought it was
Heresy.
heresy.
It's Heresy. Which showed a knight sword. Zivu. Cool, let's go, right? Like that's it. That's Zivu. Very, very obvious. Thank you, Bungie. And so that was supposed to be the end of the story. However, in week 8, we had a radio message from Savathun, where Savathun talks to Zivu, not like conversations, but like shouts out to the ether, which seems to be a thing that the Hive really like to do, where they're just like, I'm just going to talk and I'm going to assume that you can hear me.
And maybe they can because, like, when they were talking about the what was it, the helmet that they put on
The
the
Crown of Sauron.
cabal. And then there's that whole moment where they can suddenly see and hear everything across the entire Hive universe.
Yeah, maybe. That actually does make sense. Maybe it's like when you invoke their name, they can hear you type of thing because they're gods. Although Ziva's not a god anymore, so maybe she can't. In any case, she talks to Zivu, referencing chess and calling herself a queen and Zivu a knight. And then asks how close a knight is to a pawn, and says how the witness is a king with vision. And she, this is a quote from her, it has an end in mind and it knows what that means. But chess ends when the king has no moves left. It's not endless fighting like Zivu would enjoy, but an end to fighting. Lastly, Savathun mocks Zivu's new mortal status, saying, what will it mean to be a knight after the game has ended? And that kind of feels like she's queuing up what heresy's about, to be like, is Zivu about to commit heresy specifically? Like, what does it
Well,
mean to
it.
be a knight after the game has ended? When we destroy the witness in final shape, when we say this is not the final shape, Zivu, what does it mean to be a knight?
Yeah, well, it's funny because I'm suddenly reminded of one of my favorite quotes, and it's actually in Halo. So back when Bungie was doing
Surprise.
Halo, yeah, I know. But it's a line, and it says, and it's a famous quote, but it's at the end of the game, the king and the pawn go back in the same box. And so what happens to a king or a queen when the game is in, when the game is over? Well, they go back in the same box with the pawns and everything. So it's a neat little saying, just kind of showing that the mortality of everything dictates worth, because regardless of what you do in this life, when it's all over, it's over, and we're all going the same place. So
That's true. I'm very
yeah, so
excited to
whether you live it.
see Final Shape and see everything that happens after. Because there's gonna be a lot of it's like Tolan talks about the vacuum that we left by not mantling Oryx's throne, and it's like, what kind of vacuum is gonna be left when the final shape is like not?
It's a good question.
So, this week, Do you have anything more to say about the recent events?
No.
Okay. So this week on Loose Cannon, we are going to be talking about the current season lore book, Sororicide. Sororicide? What
Yeah.
does Sororicide mean?
Kill your sisters.
Oh, does it? That's funny.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, because
Well,
sorority, right?
sorority, yeah.
Yeah, because I knew regicide, I knew
Yeah,
like
Kingslayer.
patricide, matricide, you
Yeah,
know, things like
yep,
that.
yeah,
I should have
yeah.
immediately known sororicide from sorority.
What is killing your brothers?
Fratricide, I would imagine.
Yeah, fratricide, that's it, yeah.
Yeah, fratricide.
Fratricide, yeah. Fratricide. Because that's in there too, in there. It's somewhere in there.
In
In the
this
lore,
book?
I think. No, I think in the lore somewhere is the word fratricide. Maybe.
Well, I mean, that would mean that someone killed their brother, which I don't
Think
think
it
ever
is.
happened. No, the word fratricide isn't.
Oh, it's not? Okay.
No.
I thought it was.
Patricide probably is.
Yeah, maybe that one's it.
In any case, so sororicide is, and this is something that I was kind of talking about at the beginning of the episode, I think, maybe before we even started. Sororicide is the newest addition to the Books of Sorrow. It is book 8. It starts from verse 8:1 and it goes on to verse 8:12. And so for those who don't you might like know this kind of like ambiently, but I think it's interesting to kind of like look back at the Books of Sorrow. The original Books of Sorrow, the ones that we got from Calcified Fragments, went from book 1 to book 5. Book 6 is nowhere that I can find. I don't know if it's ever actually even been referenced. Book 7, however, has been used by probably Dredgen Yor, and also definitively by the Shadows of Yor in their process to create Thorn. So that's why you
Yeah.
have first, second, third, all the way up to 13th understanding of the seventh Book of Sorrow. And now we have book 8. So book 1 through 5 is about like the rise of King Oryx, the Taken King. And book 6, we don't know. It could be about his sisters. It could be about, I mean, really almost anything. Book 7 is about the Weapons of Sorrow, it seems. And book 8 is about the ascension and dissension of Hive gods, specifically of Eris's ascension. Whereas like one
Yeah.
through five is all about Oryx's. And so
Interesting.
we're gonna read these, and we're gonna try to get through all 12 entries today because most of them aren't very long. They're very like double spaced Zivu shouting. So I think we'll be able to get through all of them,
It's
maybe
just
most of them.
Marsha, Marsha, Marsha over and over again in the Lord.
Yeah. So, would you like to read the first one, or should I read the first one?
Yeah, I'll start it.
Yeah, let's go.
All right, so this one is the first entry, Eris Morn. How do you say this word?
Prolegomenon.
Prolegomenon. There you go. Nice. So this is verse 8:1. The sisters. Thoughts calcify into actions, and actions calcify into being. Such is the ontology of the hive magic. Such is de the deck of whispers that has unfolded beneath my hands. These cards are curious objects, esoterica, manifested by power and the guardian's tithes. They have taken on our forms, myself, Savathun, and Zivu Arath. Our loves, our fears, our memories, our desires. Contemplate me. Contemplate the hive. These cards unsettle me. I did not wish to be unveiled, so, but perhaps that is my consequence of my transformation. I am seen as I am, beneath my bandage, beneath my skin. So too are Zivu Arath and Savathun unveiled. Through these cards, we have found ourselves connected, dear devoted sisters and I. Inchoate, but for the eyes I have stolen, I have deciphered the meanings of the cards. drawn from the shapes of their reference. The whispers ask for reflection and meditation, speaking of paths we have taken or who we have come to be. And so my utterings, alongside those two surviving sisters, have taken the form of the new Book of Sorrow, a bound collection of verses sung by their gods and delivered to their brood as scripture. Now I deliver to my brood. Now I number among their gods. Ayat.
So, as I said, a new book of sorrow into their holy text, and I guess a number of these are supposed to be sung. We're not going to sing them. I'm not going to sing them.
Are
You can do what you
you
want.
sure?
You...
Oh, okay. We can do some live karaoke. I wouldn't know what cadence to put them in.
we'll
Maybe
get
to the Sabbathon song.
Marla, the voice of Eris and Hive screaming to do it. That'd be awesome. Entry two is Savathun. So you'll notice that they all have Savathun, Eris, or Zivu in their title. That is the perspective of who's adding this verse. So two Savathun Imago Unfurl. Verse 8:2, the witch. We were the last surviving siblings. That's what this has always been for Zivu-Arath. She wanted all of us to survive. She would throw everything at us so we could learn to survive. Didn't quite work, did it? My brother's greatest acts of navigation were metamorphoses. That was his tactic. He would change everything about himself so he could survive this universe. Meanwhile, my sister cuts the universe apart, makes it sharp as she, until that's left. There's a lot of typos in this because of how I got these, so I'm sorry. Until all that's left is her and her love. I tried to go through it and find them all, but a few slipped past. I'm a little bit of both. No need to choose. I don't have my brother's fear or my sister's vanity. Even in the infinite adaptability, orcs could not withstand the Guardians. So Zivu-Arath wants to prove she can be as rigid and unyielding as she has always been. No need to fix what isn't broken. Overwhelming forces, tactics, and intimidation. We are who we are, and we chose our morphs carefully. I wanted life. Zivu wanted vengeance and dominion. Oryx wanted to venture out deep in thought and feed on the delicacies of truth. Well, he got what he wanted. Now Oryx knows death more intimately than us. No bringing him back. Poor Zivu's distraught. With all that war and ruin to hide behind, she thinks she doesn't show it. Deep down, she believes Oryx must have survived through their logic. She believes he'll be conjured back just like he conjured us. That was a long time ago. We've moved past that. Despite everything to come, I will live on, with and without them. Should I say I miss my siblings? That I miss the times when the threats of death and short lifespan were still with us, when we piloted our needle, when we dove and became what we became? No. Zivu is the sentimental one. We are now who we were. Who we were no longer who exists. Oh, we are not who we were. Damn it. I sound like my brother.
Yeah. That's pretty telling for Savathun's character. Just like you were saying earlier, like you like how Savathun kind of adopts the like contemporary societal speak, and she seems to speak that way. Like Zivu-Arath is just has this like very angry death metal sound to her that comes from these old like ways of speaking. And then Oryx is, very, he tries to be very poetic somewhat in the Hive language. And then Savathun's just like, hey, let me just tell you something real quick.
Yeah, no,
She's,
sorry, go on.
yeah, I was just gonna say, like, she's very malleable when it comes to that, but such is the nature of somebody who's going to lie and manipulate and try to appeal to your better judgment. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and
So.
it's funny that you said that based on what I was saying about Savathun earlier, because that actually really makes sense because it's right here in this paragraph. My brother's greatest acts of navigation were his metamorphoses. that was his tactic. He would change everything about himself so that he could survive this universe. Meanwhile, my sister cuts the universe apart, makes it sharp as she, until all that's left is her and her love. And then Savathun says, she's a bit of both. No need to choose. So she's kind of like flowing between like the endless adaptability of Oryx and the rigidness of Zivu, where she's just like
Yeah.
going right between the two as needed.
Right. Yeah. It just makes you feel like, I know that Savathun, having been blessed by the traveler or gift of the traveler, is like whatever we say. There's probably some reasoning behind it, and it has to be something to do with sacrifice. Like they keep nailing in the lore or in cutscenes, whatever. All of Destiny comes down to sacrifice and survival. So it's like survival and sacrifice for the betterment of whatever. Like just for whatever reason, like your race or your species to survive beyond extinction. Whatever is necessary to make that happen, and the ultimate like play is sacrifice. And so maybe Savathun found herself in that in the middle, right? So she was just kind of like, look, I see there's no winning or losing or it's just survival. So I'll put myself out there, in a way to make that happen.
I like it.
Yeah, sorry.
No,
That
not at all.
was kind of a rant. Do you want me to read the next one?
Yeah, go for it. Entry three.
Okay, cool. All right. So this one is this one's Zivu Arras heavy metal battle song. This is verse 8:3, The Adherent. What I am uttered by Zivu Arath, God of many shapes. It's neat how they like put those lines like that. I'm not really sure what to make of that. It's almost like this one kind of reminds me of like to put it in biblical reference, it's almost like Psalms. Like if you ever read any of the Psalms where they're like it's a song, but it's actually like a Bible verse.
So before you actually say that, I was thinking the ex before you actually continue, I was thinking the exact same thing, especially with this format of like Zivu screaming and then talking the rest of the paragraph. This is how she spoke in the original Books of Sorrow as well. But in the case of like how this is supposed to be sung and everything, I was like thinking about it. And it's like if you look at these like five paragraphs that she has, and you stop at the second line. So it's like the first one's like, I am the god of silence, I slit 100 million wailing throats. And then I'm the god of logic, I shiver in delight and speak the truth because speaking truth is good. I am, and et cetera, et cetera. It's like that's like a fucking like heavy metal, like, where it's like you have the one person screaming it, and then it's like the
That's
like little
exactly
like
right.
under.
That's exactly right. So that's what I was going to say is like, so typically if you've ever been in a congregation and listened to people sing
Oh,
the
I haven't.
Psalms, okay, so it's somewhat this way. There'll
That's
be
funny.
like in a choir, there will be parts that are left to certain people in the choir. And so they'll have, so like what I am uttered by Zivu Arath, God of many shapes, that's like the opening. But then, so they do this in heavy metal too. I mean, there's always like in death metal or in like screamo, they'll have two singers. They'll be the one screaming, and then there'll be the one like doing the actual harmonic or the melody of verse. So anyway, so this is Zivu Arath's death metal heavy metal song. I am the god of silence, so that's all capital screamed. And then I slit 100 million wailing throats. I watch as their blood scatters like precious stones. Their screams turn into sighs. Their sighs turn to silence. I stand among the dead and listen to the absence of sound. Then I am the god of logic. I shiver in delight to speak the truth because speaking truth is good. I speak my brother's words, the words he cut from the worm god Akka's throat. I am the god of life. I pair dead things from truth, and in this I find life that cannot be extinguished. I hold that life, nurture it by testing it against myself, by removing the weakness that bring death. In this I embrace life and all its strength. I am God of love. Any life that withstand me will be with me in the final shape. There we will stand together. That life will know me, and I will know it, paired to our true shape, seeing each other for what we are. I am the God of all that exists. I have endured while others have not. I am last of surviving sibling. I will stand at the final shape and be the end. I will maintain my existence when nothing else has. I will stand alone. And so, like, I can't, I can't sing that, but yeah, you get it, right? So
No,
it's
I
like,
do.
yeah. So in Psalms, I hate to go back to this, but like in Psalms, you would have, it's very like melodic and drawn out. So like the words, the sentences and the structure last for a very long time. And oftentimes, like in a congregation, they're not going to do the entire thing, but they might do like verse 1 and 2 over and over again, or 3 and 4 over and over again, just to kind of, set up the pulpit or whatever. But it's interesting that these all stand alone as things that you can just, like almost sing in repetition if you wanted to. So like if you wanted to say, I am the God of silence, and then just sing all those lines in repetition, you could. Or if you wanted to invoke, I am the God of logic or life or love or all that exists. It's really interesting. So she is very, very, very full of herself. So
I
that's
might have to look for someone
that
that does.
vanity coming through.
Yeah. I might have to like look around the community, see if there's any Do you think Log would do it?
I wish he would. That would be cool.
I
I
wonder if
don't.
I
Does
wonder
he
if I can pay
sing
him to do it.
or
I
just
don't know
play
if he
heavy
sings. I
metal?
think he just plays. But I mean, I'd love it if he sang too. Like, fuck, you don't have to be good, you know? It's not about being good. It's just about being badass. I think he could do it. Like, and just pare it down to the first two sentences of each paragraph, because I feel like that's all it really needs. Otherwise, it gets a little too much into like the psalm territories.
Oh, there was an awesome person on Twitter that did the Kitsune lore entry, which was oh fantastic, and got a movie of the week for it too. It was really good. I wonder if they would do that.
And we can workshop with someone and get ourselves some movie of the week emblems. That'd be fucking sweet.
That's funny.
So this entry actually had quite a few things that I wanted to pick out. So like in the beginning, Zivu says that she is the god of many shapes. So it kind of sounds like she was taking Oryx's old title, the King Geometer, which he was like, I would learn all the shapes, blah blah blah. And so now she's the witnesses number two instead of Oryx. And then furthering that, she says, I speak my brother's words, the words he cut from the word god, the worm god Akka's throat, which he did and perceived the ability to take. He became Oryx the Taken King after that. So it's like, is this the ability to take? And then she goes, by removing the weaknesses that bring death, in this I embrace life in all its strength, and also that life will know me and I will know it, paired to our true shape, seeing each other for what we are. And so that is the act of actually being taken. So I had linked here one that I thought was just a good one, the Taken Vandal. So there's the Taken Vandal, Scion, Thrall, Wizard, Centurion, Captain, Phalanx, if I didn't already say that, Knight. Basically, all the Taken variants that we have, they each have this entry that explains like how they were taken. And so I'll read this one really quick. You are a Vandal. You slip through life like a thief, trying to hide from everything greater than you, lest you be reduced again to a dreg. You have been taken. Come out into the light. You will never be diminished again. No one will ever rebuke you with a blade. What captain disciplines you? What obedience has been burnt into your lungs? You do as your captain commands. You wield the weapon you are given. You teach the dregs and make sure everyone pays their share of the loot. But nothing is yours. You have no space to call your own. You deserve a place of safety. You deserve to be alone with yourself. There is a knife for you. It is shaped like, this place is mine. Take up the knife. Make it your companion. Take your new shape. And so this place is mine is in brackets, and every Taken has their own bracket like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so just to give a couple examples, the knight is no more fear. There is a knife for you. It is shaped like no more fear. And in that it was the ability to throw the fire. Instead of just hiding behind their walls, they would throw fire.
Yeah.
The thrall, there is a knife for you. It is shaped like sideways. They would zip back and forth. The scion is, it is shaped like division. They would multiply each other. Centurion was, it is shaped like it will find you. Those little, seeker balls they got going, you know, all these like little things.
I remember that. Yeah.
And so, so that is the act of being
ability
taken.
That they got from being taken, mm-hmm. And overcoming whatever they were known for in the first place.
Yeah.
So it makes you wonder, like, if, sorry to go sidebar. It just makes you wonder, like, what, how is the gift given, right? So if you're taken and then given the gift of something else, is that just something that happens, like, just, you know, organically, or is it like specifically given from Oryx to that entity because he was taken?
Based on what has been said and what is said in this entry, by removing the weaknesses that bring death, so it's specifically looking at an entity and what makes them weak. So like in the case of a scion, it's that they alone aren't a formidable force, so they can multiply. Okay. In the case of a thrall, they are easily killed, so they can kind of blink left and right and dodge your attacks. In the case of a vandal, you know, it's like, it's stuff like that where it is curated to who they are on like the battlefield almost.
Okay. All right.
And, So then that brings us to entry number 4, Eris Morn, Evocate Desire. Verse 8-4. The Harbinger, which is the Shadowkeep title for those who didn't know that or forgot that. My vile transformation is complete. What was foretold, what was feared, is now true. Eris Morn has given into the Hive's endless hunger. She has taken up the mantle of a Hive Queen and leads vast armies of acolytes into war. Inevitable, inimitable, who else but her? What else but this? Ikora believes my transformation was not necessary. It was. I hear whispers, but when do I not? They have been with me since the Hellmouth. This is what I am. It cannot be refuted or denied. This is the shape I have chosen for myself. My morph, the Harbinger. Ikora believes I will martyr myself, but what martyr walks towards oblivion with a knife in hand? I will not serenely. In my morph, I am unafraid. In my morph, I wield fear and the earliest of fears, fear of devourment. Since we ourselves were prey, we have felt terror at the gaping maw, at the hungering gaze at us with delight. I have stared that hunger in the face. I have endured it for too long. Now, I will be the predator. I will devour. I will instill that first fear. I hunger. But that hunger has always been strained against the limitations of my lightless body. But here, in the Witch Queen's endless hypogeum, that hunger has bloomed. That part of me has erupted from my body as from the earth, like one of those obscene carnivorous corpse flowers, dark cores swallowing sunlight, plush petals open to death. Ridiculous. Who would compare hunger to a flower? I do not wait passively for my prey. No. No, it is a worm. A worm I have desperate urge to feed. It can be nothing else. Sorry for laughing at the end there. There is this animated like video, short video or whatever that I fucking saw, and I showed my wife, and it was like two guys at a bar talking about how to approach women and how they're always failing. And so then the guy approaches the girl by crawling on the floor and like tapping her ankle, and he's like, "I am a worm. I am a worm in your presence. Do not fear me. I am a worm. I'm so beneath you." And the girl was like, "Oh my God, the worm approach." And like very smitten by it. So now whenever I read a worm, that's my it's like it's so hard to stay focused and not just say I am a worm and just like break out from that. So it was really hard to resist, and I had to say it there.
That's
Oh.
funny.
And then
You know what stands out in this one is the like one of those obscene carnivorous corpse flowers.
Yeah.
Dark cores swallowing sunlight, plush petals open to death. Ridiculous. Who would compare hunger to a flower? I don't, it's just like, oh. It's like
Yeah.
she immediately has a thought and then just dismisses it.
Yeah, that is a little odd of her. Usually she's not like that.
It's like she was like, I can't accept. It's almost like she saw the beauty in what was going on, and then she had to like quickly dismiss it,
Yeah.
because, yeah.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I
Like
love
she
that. That's
saw.
exactly it.
Yeah.
Sorry to talk
So,
over you. I was so excited about that. That's
no, no.
great.
So it's kind of like a revelation, because Ikora was worried she's gonna, ultimately succumb to the hive,
Yeah, you're
and
gonna
then,
enjoy it too much. She's
yeah.
like, "Look at me, I'm this beautiful flower." No, never mind, never mind.
Yeah, no, it's a worm. I'm a worm. It's good. I have a worm to eat, feed. It's cool. We're all good.
Yeah. So in this entry as well, Eris says, "This is the shape I have chosen for myself, my morph, the harbinger." So I think that's the triumph. That's the final triumph. We've got the mother morph, the knight morph, the king morph, and the final triumph will be the harbinger morph.
Oh, that's cool.
So I think the Imbaru engine, there won't be another card to open another section, but it has to be in the Umbaru engine. There has to be like some other thing that is, this is how you perceive, this is how you, what is it called? That when you enact their thing, the word they have, I think it begins with P.
Oh, insight.
No, with when like when like I make war, I make cunning to bring you back,
Evoke.
I guess. Good enough. I think we're gonna be evoking vengeance, and thus the Harbinger morph.
Okay. Interesting.
Would you like to take the next one?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Okay. So this next one is Eris Morn again. Mimesis. How you say that word?
I believe that would be it.
Okay.
Mimesis?
Yeah, something. I don't know. Mimesis? Mimesis?
Mimesis. I'm not reading that. I'm just throwing that out. I don't know if that's actually it.
Mimesis, mimesis.
Oh yeah, it is mime sis, huh?
I don't know.
I am a mime.
Yeah. So this is verse 8:5, blades. What is the nature of war? Ritual. What is the nature of ritual? Fascination. L imitation shapes desire, and Zivu Arath has become its greatest meditator. She compels those she wars against to war against her, and the object over which war is existence itself. She takes up her blade, and we take up ours. Zivu Arath cuts at us, and so do we cut at her. We bleed together, mirrored in our pain and violence. Savathun looked at us through a veil so that we would not see her. Sivu Arath looks at us through a dark mirror, and she only sees herself. This is her design, her ultimate mechanism of desire. She would make us into her image. She would cut the entire universe into her image so that she is the only thing left at the end of all things. Vain and lonely. That is Sivu Arath, bereft of her siblings. The sword logic is predicated on such imitation. To return Sivu Arath's violence is to embrace it and its beautiful thesis. We are forced to react again and again as she makes her advance. We are forced to desire existence at any cost, just as she does. Fated? Inevitable? No. An ontological trap. The Warmind knew this, and he could know her the most intimately out of all of us. His escalation did nothing but mirror her endlessly. His self-sacrifice put an end to that font of violence. It was a frustration in her logic that he did so, as Sivu Arath recognizes no sacrifice that does not end in a scream. But self-sacrifice could not put an end to her war march. Only doubt can do so. And in Sivu Arath's mournful solipsism, she will be left with nothing but that.
Kind of this Eris
That's a
calling out Zivu.
yeah, that's a good foreshadow too, because it's literally what she does at the end. Is she like, she says, I'm just gonna put an end to her war march once and for
Yeah.
all.
That's all there is
Because
left, right?
she yeah, because Sivu Arath thinks she's the center of the universe, like her solipsism comment, and she is very vain and wants, to be the end of all things. Like she thinks that's a recurring theme with a lot of big bad bosses in this game. Everybody wants to be the end.
Yeah, I mean that's because the witness like fucking stirred them all up
Yeah.
in this final shape bullshit, and it's just like, well, the witness has one final shape, and Oryx had another final shape, and Kallus had another final shape, and Rolk had another final
Yeah.
shape, and Nezarek had another final
Yeah.
shape, and everyone had their own. Everyone was like so like, yeah, that's what it's gonna be, and I'm so excited for it, and I'm gonna be the one,
Right.
I'm gonna be the one that does it, and the witness is like, no, you're not. Just.
Yeah, no, you're not. But I'm going to use you. You're
Yeah.
my chess piece. I moved across the board. I offer you as a tactic or a bait to win. I just like the idea that was put out there that a pawn, if it makes it to the other side of the chessboard, can quick become a king, right? So
The
it's kind of
queen.
like a queen, I'm sorry, can come become a queen, and then just all of a sudden can do all the moves.
Yeah.
So if you're a lowly pawn and you can make it to the other side of the board, then you get all the advantages.
That's another good point about the whole chess analogy. I
Yeah.
wonder if that's what Savathun was kind of saying about herself, that she acknowledged that she was a pawn, but that she made it to the other side and now she's a queen.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking, is that's how she circumvented the witnesses, plays.
Huh. You're
And
good.
now she's the queen of all. I'm sorry. It's just connection.
Yeah, no, if you hadn't said that, I wouldn't have made that connection myself. In any case, verse 6 is Sivu Arath, Katolophyromai. It's Greek. I don't know if that's how it's actually pronounced. Verse 8:6, Lacuna.
I think you actually did a really good job pronouncing that,
Yeah.
because
I hope I did.
no, I'm serious though. Like that was like really good.
My navigation, sung by Sivu Arath, faithful sister to Oryx. The sky gave our sister strength from false shapes. She fell to what felled you, lonely navigator. This is their lie. Their companionship is strength. This is our truth. Their complacency decays existence. Their dead rise when they deserve to die. They will not meet our truth with truth. Thus, they do not deserve it. They are not real. You were real. You were to last forever. Our undying creation. I would die again to give you strength. I would cut my wounds so that you may step through. You will not rise by false shapes, but with our unconditional victory. She who has scoured of the sky now brings forth her brood. They have taken up your weapon, which is all that you are, and she will conjure you back with her understanding. So it's basically this is Zivu being fanatical as always, thinking that she can in fact conjure Oryx to return by enacting his existence, which is Oryx the Taken King, the Navigator. So trying to fuse some of those together, I assume. But Oryx is forever dead, so she's really not getting anywhere. Sad.
Well, say that word again, cadolophyromai. Is that right?
Yeah, cadolophyromide.
Okay, so this is a head word in a musical fragment from the first of like it's basically an old musical fragment from a long time ago, and it was written on papyrus, and they discovered it, and it's it, the text is I cry, your mother's blood that drives you mad, great happiness in mortals never lasting, but like a sail of a swift ship, which a god shook up and plunged it with terrible troubles into the greedy and deadly waves of sea. So it's a very, very old papyrus that was discovered, you know, from Greek times, whatever. And it's like this lament. It's like this musical lament. And I'm assuming that the word is kind of like a catch-all for this particular point in Zivu Arras, you know, lamentation of her like screaming to the ether that you know it's like what would you say? It's kind of like old man yelling at cloud meme, or like you know what I mean?
Yeah,
Or
I
it's like
do.
you going outside kneeling on your lawn and looking up at the heavens and going, why oh why is these things so? And then you know screaming into the heavens. So I think that's its usage here. But it's interesting that they wrote it in Greek instead of just saying cadolophyromai or however you pronounce it. It's almost like they wanted you to specifically go back and think of that papyrus, which was this lament that was screamed into the clouds.
Yeah,
Interesting.
I think you're right that they chose to keep it in its like original in its original Greek text for that purpose. However, without this entry being in the API, which it is not, you can't just search Greek
I know.
characters. So it's
I
like
know.
you're not getting anywhere with it. It's like, well, there's a K and then the one that looks like an A and the one that looks like a T and an O. And this one's like an upside down Y and then another O and then like a swoopy P.
Swoopy pea. Yeah, all the carrots have like specific names from the Greek alphabet, but
Oh,
yeah,
yeah,
you're
it's
right.
alpha. I see a micro in there.
But you're right.
Pinto.
Like you couldn't just search this out. You would have to like it's almost like it was just like left there because they know their audience.
Kidney. You know, Greek words.
It's yeah, Greek words. Greek words. It's just a bunch of Greek words. Just here you go. Just Greek words.
All right, so I have a question for you. We
Yes.
are exactly halfway through this book, six of the 12 entries. Do you think we have the time to finish the next 12 entries?
See. Probably not.
Right? Because I'd rather stop at
Yeah.
six and then have another six
Yeah.
than stop
Yeah,
at
let's do
eight and
that.
only have four.
Yeah.
So
Let's
then
do that.
I will end it on as I said earlier, I will end it on the final entry in which I use to theorize my point of the final morph entry being the Harbinger morph, in which Savathun says, "I wish I could behold her morph. I can see it in my mind's eye. Her chitin will engulf her. Her eyes will be uncovered. She will laugh, and what a delightful sound that will be after everything." And so then she says, "I may still see her morph. There's still time. I'll be so proud of her." And that's when we revive Savathun. She gets to see Eris's morph, the Harbinger morph, and goes, "It looks good on you, honey." And so
Yeah.
I'm like very this like, oh, there's gonna be a Harbinger morph entry. We got a new hive. We effectively have a new hive. Like there's potential that Bungie will capitalize on this and create a new hive faction like they did with the Wyverns for the Vex. Or
Oh yeah.
what are the ones below the dregs in the Fallen that they made for D2? The Wretches.
Yeah, and they crawl.
What? No, those are Screebs.
No, those I was thinking of the wretched they because they crawl. The dregs originally didn't crawl in D1.
Wretches crawl?
Yeah.
I've never noticed.
They when they run at you, they run on all four of their arms because they're not docked like the dregs were. Like the dregs could still hang from the ceiling. As we saw in D1 when you opened cutscene mission, but the dregs when you fought the dregs, they would just kind of do that like cover based strategy where they would come out and then go back in and come out. Do you
I
remember that in
no.
D1 when you'd fight the dregs from afar and you'd shoot at them and they would just kind of like go behind a cover and
Oh
come back
yeah.
out?
Yeah, I mean that's just their AI.
But in D2 on Nessus, when we first were fighting them, they would like crawl and run at you.
Yeah. Huh. I've never
That
noticed that.
makes
I'm
look.
gonna go on Wretched. I'm gonna go on Nessus and find some wretches. That's like one
Yeah.
of those words, not one of those words. That's one of those phrases that they teach kids who stutter.
Like rural juror.
I guess, because I can just imagine a person who stutters would have a lot of difficulty saying, "I'm going to go to Nessus and watch some and watch some wretches."
Maybe, yeah, maybe they wouldn't though. Like the actor that played Darth Vader.
Did
What's
he
his name?
stutter?
Yeah, he was a stutterer.
Something Earl
Yes, James Earl
James Earl
Jones.
Jones.
Yeah, he was a he had really bad stuttering, but when he acted and would speak his lines, he was very eloquent and could do it
That's
without any issue.
crazy.
I know. It's really good.
That was like Bill, that's kind of like Bill Denbrough from Stephen King's It. Where he has a stutter. I don't think they really translate it well in the movie slash TV movie, but like in the book, he's like heavy stuttering all the time,
Yeah,
except
yeah.
when he's impersonating his father or he's saying "Hi ho, Silver Away." He never
Oh
stutters
yeah,
when
I
he's
remember that.
impersonating someone else.
Yeah. I love it, the story. The TV
Yeah.
adaptation was horrible.
Yeah. I'm a sucker for cosmic horrors that are like what it actually is, like being this like
Yeah.
thing from like outside
Outer
of our
space.
reality, not even just outer space, but like outside of our reality, you know? And then it comes to
Right.
us and it's like it doesn't actually want to eat people, it's eating your fear, but it does
Yeah.
that by eating people. It's like, oh shit, that's so fucking
Right.
great. But yeah, the
Right. Kind of like the
movies.
psychological horrors that were plaguing Eris on the moon, from
Yeah.
her nightmares. Which is interesting because, like, okay, so, like, all the horrors that we see in Destiny, they're a lot of them are, they somewhat mirror real life, right, in a way, because, what are the tropes from horror movies? You have zombies, You have ghosts or specters, whatever. And then you have like the monster from Frankenstein, which are like aberrations that were created. And then you have like the whole thing of being infected, like SIVA, just like no longer. That's almost like a mechanical horror, so that the infection of this, SIVA infection just takes over the mind.
Well, that's like
It's
that,
really interesting.
I forget what movie it was. It was, and I'm gonna ruin this movie, so I'm sorry that I don't remember the name of it. So I can't give a warning, but it's like that movie where it was like teenagers or something, they noticed that people in their town were being taken over, and then when they tried to like raise the alarm, like aliens or whatever are taking over the town. That's when they find out that they're actually the last town to be taken over, and the entire world has already been done.
That was it. Yeah, I love those hopeless horror movies. That's why zombie movies are my favorite, because
How do you
it's,
win?
I know this is gonna, yeah, exactly. That the thing about zombie movies to me are the most, they seem like the most plausible, just like from, a reality sense. So it's the one that scares me the most, because like we know, just like take for instance The Last of Us, right? The cordyceps take over the mind and then they become, berserk, undead creatures. Like that is in nature. That's real
It's
in nature.
happening
And so
right
like that,
now, just to
yeah,
bugs.
exactly.
And the
Like they're
scariest thing about The Last of Us Cordyceps is, and I'm so glad the show did this. In the beginning of the show, they had the doctor who was like, "Yeah, the only reason why this doesn't work in humans is because our bodies are too hot." But I guess theoretically, if in the future the Earth got warmer and the cordyceps adapted
Yep.
to a warmer environment, then maybe it can happen in humans. And it's just like,
Yep.
excuse me? Like, I know it's still the theoretical, but that's fucking terrifying.
They asked Guillermo del Toro, I guess is his name, like what scares him, the most, and he said zombie movies. And then they asked George or Romero, what's his name? The
Yeah,
Romero
Robert
guy.
Romero.
They asked him what
George
was the
Romero. Why did I say
scariest thing.
Robert?
Yeah, George Romero. And he said zombie movies. And what he said about it was really interesting, because he said the thing that scared him the most was when the news anchor suddenly realized there was no hope and he's on TV and he's, like basically having a meltdown and freaking out, That was the scariest moment. Like all the zombies eating brains and like being torn apart and all that, and the shooting and the violence and all that, none of that scared him. What scared him the most was like the very
It's hopeless.
realistic. Yeah.
Have you ever read The Walking Dead? Not watched, read.
No, no, no.
Fantastic. Like, I guess there's a lot of hate about it. People like consider it too mainstream, but fuck
Because
off,
of
it's amazing.
the. A lot of that was
It's
filmed here in Texas.
really, that's
In
interesting.
Austin. Yeah, in Austin.
It's very good, very amazing comics, and it's finished, so it's like, there you go, here's a fucking amazing chunk of story. And so, it's like Rick Grimes was in a coma when the zombie like apocalypse basically was kicking off, right? And so he comes back, he finds his family. Shit happens with his best friend who was sleeping with his wife, thinking like Rick's never coming back, so I'm gonna have sex with her now. And so they get into a fight, and best friend gets shot, dies, and they bury him. And then they leave where they were. I think it was like Atlanta. They leave Atlanta, they go somewhere, they're like migrating away, trying to find safety. And in that travel, they realize that. Because as it is now, they know that when you get bit by a zombie, you turn into a zombie. But they had the assumption that that's the only way to turn into a zombie. But when someone died because they however they died, they turned into a zombie. And Rick realizes, it's like, oh no, we're all zombies. We're all already zombies. It has nothing to do with being bit by them. So no matter what, when I die, I'll become one. And that's when he realizes, I just buried my best friend, who is now a zombie 6 feet underground. And so he goes back to dig up his best friend and put him out.
Wow.
Like, this is like super early too. Like, this is the good shit.
So on that note, it's all hopeless. We're all gonna die, and there's no help getting out of here alive. It's over.
But hey, you know, in the words of whatever the main character from Zom 100 said, I don't have to go to work today.
At least I don't have to do that anymore.
Yeah. You know, no more work. It's fine. You know, zombie apocalypse, this is the best day ever, actually.
So,
So
it's a good one.
that's gonna be it for our show this week. We really just let ourselves get off track. We're gonna save the next six entries for next week, and maybe even next week we will have whatever the fuck is else is in this season, and we will definitely have some Festival of the Lost stuff. I'm so actually excited for Festival of the Lost this year with the
Me
changes they
too.
made with the eerie engrams and stuff. That sounds very cool. It's
I hope it goes good. I hope
yeah.
people are happy.
I hope the lore entries that we get, fingers crossed, the lore entries that we get, I hope that they are much easier to achieve. And if we don't get any, I guess that's also kind of okay, because then I can still earn volume one, volume two with the candy that I get that I don't use on Eerie Engrams. I don't know what I'm gonna do.
There
I'm
you
gonna do it. I'll
go.
figure it out. But yeah, if you want to find more of us, we are on Twitter at Loose Cannon Show, as it is spelled right down there. You can find us there. Our pinned tweet has everything that you can find us on, all the audio and video formats that you can find us on. So you can just, you know, you can go right there. That'll be it for us this week, and we will be back on the 29th, the day before Mischief Night. Do you have Mischief Night in Texas? I think it's a regional thing.
No.
Do you know what Mischief Night is, or are you just like, what the fuck is he talking about?
I have no idea.
Mischief Night is October 30th, the day before Halloween, when all the teenagers go out and they just gentle vandalism.
Oh, okay.
So it's like, you know,
Cool.
egging houses, toilet paper in the trees, and baloney on the cars. That one's not gentle. That one's actually fucked up.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you know, it's just like stupid shit. When I was a kid, one last thing I'll just leave everyone off on. When I was a kid, I knew this guy. I say when I was a kid, I mean when I was like 13, I knew this like 17-year-old, because like a friend of friend of friend's older brother type of deal. He was like 6 feet tall. He had a lifelike squirrel costume, and it's weird to say lifelike because he was 6 feet tall, so it's a 6 foot tall squirrel, and he would go out on Mischief Night and just run in front of cars.
Oh my God.
And it was the greatest fucking thing ever. Just be like, what
Oh
the
my God.
fuck?
Nice.
So come join us on the 29th while we finish the lore book Sorocide and talk about Festival of the Lost. Have a good one,
Yeah.
everybody.
Bye.